Verse 20 sums up what we want to say about Gehazi today. Verse number 20, we read, "But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, 'Behold, my master has spared Naaman this Syrian, and not receiving at his hand that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him.'" Leo Tolstoy was a Russian novelist in the 1800s. He wrote many, many stories which really displayed a truth about life. And on one of his stories, he told of a successful peasant farmer who had some ground, had enough ground to get by, but he certainly wasn't happy with his lot. He was known in the area for always wanting more of everything. One day, a local man came to him and said that for 1,000 Russian rubles, that he could have all of the land that he could walk around in one day. 1,000 Russian rubles is equivalent of £12 today. But the catch was this, that he started off at sunrise, he started off at a certain point, and he had to be back at that certain point again by sundown. So the next morning he started off, he began to sprint, and then he ran out of breath, and he began then to walk at a very fast pace. By midday he was extremely tired, but he kept going. Of course he was fueled by this desire, I want to walk as far as possible so that I can get as much ground as is possible. However, late in the afternoon, he realized that his greed had taken him far, far away from the starting point. And he realized that he was going to have to put all of his strength and might into getting back to that starting point by sundown. And so he turned and he ran. He got closer to the starting point. The sun, however, it was beginning to go down. He could see it going down on the horizon. And then, of course, the finish line appeared. Gasping for breath and with every last ounce of his strength, he then reached out and he ran and dragged his body just over the finish line a second in time. Just after he got past the finish line, the sun, it went down. However, as soon as he crossed the finish line, the amount of effort and energy that he had placed into getting across that finish line, he actually was pronounced dead just a few seconds later. His servants dug his grave, and they always remembered the lesson that greed can completely consume an individual. And you know, here in 2 Kings chapter 5, you have another individual who, for all of his privileges, the privileges of serving Elisha, the privilege of observing a holy man of God, the privilege of serving this man of God, for all of his privileges, yet here was a man who was completely consumed with greed. He had spent months, even years, with the soft-hearted and tender-hearted Elisha, the one who was a servant, the one who was holy. Yet, whilst he had spent so much time with Elisha and serving him and learning of him and serving in the ministry with him, yet it seems that he was completely unaffected, that none of the spirit of Elisha rested upon his servant Gehazi. You see, this story in the last few verses of 2 Kings 5, it is a frightening show of the power of covetousness. For whenever covetousness got into this man's heart, Gehazi, it destroyed his ministry, and it ended up having ramifications not only on his personal health, but also the health of his entire family. For he was smitten with leprosy, and so was his seed. Interestingly, the name Gehazi, it actually means valley of vision. Valley of vision. And you think of all that Gehazi would have seen. He would have viewed the dead child being raised to life. He would have viewed Elisha dealing with individuals in a wise way. You think of 2 Kings 3, how he dealt with that confederacy of greedy kings, essentially. He would have viewed Elisha being that man of God, being that soft-hearted, that tender-hearted individual. Yet here was a man who, for all of his physical vision, all that he beheld through the ministry of Elisha, yet it seems he has absolutely no spiritual vision, because he was captivated by a vision of gold and not a vision of God. You see, whilst gold is a help in life, it can also be a grievous hindrance in life. It can block you and rob you of your vision. Money today, it is a necessity. It is a necessity. Because without money, without an income, without some form of finance, well, it is very, very difficult to survive. However, when you become taken by it, when it becomes, as it were, your vision, that's all that you're possessed of, then it actually becomes a complete barrier to having a true vision of God. Speaking of the desire to be rich, Paul warned young Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 9, they that will be rich, it simply means will to be rich, they want to be rich, they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. And he's speaking here of that desire to be rich, that desire to possess money. He's not saying that when you have it, when you possess it, it's wrong. But the will of it, the desire to have it, whenever you have that desire and you're consumed by that desire, then it actually it leads to the drowning of men in destruction. Oh, child of God, this morning, beware of the snare of riches. It's not wrong to have them, but rather it's the want of having them, the desire to have them. That is a sin. That's the sin of covetousness. And that is what this man was guilty of. Here was a man who wanted something that essentially was not given to him, that was not his lot. This gift of gold, it was originally given to Elisha. But Elisha, he said no. And so Gehazi, it was really none of his business. He was the servant of Elisha. Yet here we find him running after Naaman and coming to Naaman and simply asking him for that which was not his in the first place. Oh, here's Gehazi. And I've called him this morning greedy Gehazi, because that's what he was. He was a man consumed of greed. He was a man who wanted more than he needed, and he was a man who then ran after that to the destruction of his own spiritual well-being. So this morning I want to consider greedy Gehazi and his God of gold. Greedy Gehazi and his God of gold. I want you to think with me firstly about an aspiration that dominated him. An aspiration that dominated him. Verse 20, we read, but Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, behold, my master has spared Naaman this Syrian in not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. The story continues with Naaman and Elisha. We left Naaman last week. There he was. He was just cleansed of his leprosy. He had just been pronounced clean miraculously by Elisha. He had dipped in the River Jordan 7 times. He had come up through those waters. And his flesh was now as the flesh of a child. And you remember last week that one of the evidences that Naaman was now a true child of God was this. That he came to Elisha and he wanted to bestow a blessing upon him. Wanted to give him a gift. To just simply say thank you. Thank you for all that you have done for me. But you'll remember that we pointed out to you last week that Elisha did not want this gift, because Naaman had already tried to buy the gift of God with money. He had already come to the king of Israel and he had already tried to buy that gift. He had made a substantial offering. So Elisha wanted to be absolutely sure that Naaman knew that this cleansing that he had received, it was not in any way, shape or form through money. And so, this is where we left off Naaman. Elisha, he then tells Naaman never to sacrifice to any other god again. And he then sends Naaman on his way. Verse 19 says that he simply went on his way. But verse 20 then, Gehazi, he's watching all of this. And he states, as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. Gehazi's reasoning is this, that because Elisha did not take that gift from Naaman, that it would discourage this young convert in his faith. Here was a young man, he had just been cleansed of his leprosy, and he had offered a gift, quite a substantial gift, but a gift nonetheless, to Elisha. And here was Gehazi, he was thinking this is going to discourage this young convert. And he's giving the gift. If he's going to give it to someone, well then it may as well be me. Here I am. I'm serving Elisha. I have a small dwelling house, as we just probably last week. He wouldn't have had much of this life's earthly goods. He was a simple servant of Elisha. Elisha said, and Gehazi did. So his thinking is this, I will make a little bit on the side for myself. Sure, there's nothing wrong with it. Naaman wanted to give this gift anyway. It's legitimate. And so here we see a man who is now completely dominated by the aspiration of having riches for himself. Did you notice what it said in verse 20? I will run after him and take somewhat of him. The picture here is of a greedy Gehazi, a covetous Gehazi, and he's running after it. He's running after Naaman. He wants this gold so much that Naaman, yes, is sent on his way, but Gehazi, he's chasing the gold. He's running after this gold. What a picture of a covetous heart running after the riches of another. You see, whilst having riches is not wrong, yet hungering after riches is wrong. It is a sin to run after riches. You see, you can have riches. And if the Lord blesses you with riches by virtue of your occupation or indeed even your office, because of your hard work, then it's not wrong to possess riches. The Lord Bible clearly teaches us that the Lord will bless us in basket and in store. And he's speaking there about material prosperity. He's saying that there's nothing wrong with material prosperity. What the issue is this, is not possessing riches, but when riches possess you. Whilst it's not wrong to have them, it is wrong to desire to have riches. And like Gehazi, running after them. That is the sin of covetousness. And I wonder perhaps this morning, is greedy Gehazi sadly a picture of you? Yes, the Lord has blessed you in basket and in store, and he has provided for your every need. And the Lord has prospered you. And you do not lack or want any good thing. And yet at the same time, you're found today chasing after riches. Chasing after that which really is not your own. And perhaps you're not chasing after it physically or not even trying to do it. But in your heart, you know, there is that tendency, I want more. I want more. Oh, the Lord has given me enough and I should be content. But I want more. There is this heart, this consumption of heart that you are now consumed by the vision of you being rich. The 10th commandment clearly states in Exodus 20 verse 17, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. This is covetousness. So in other words, it's not just even riches, but it is the manifestation of riches. Maybe at times you look at what your neighbor has. Maybe the house, maybe the car, maybe even their job, their occupation, whatever it might be. If you find that your heart is hankering after what they have, and of course your neighbor is not just the person that lives beside you. Your neighbor is your fellow man. It's your fellow man. So it's anybody in this world. If you find your own heart running after what someone else has, what someone else does, what someone else possesses, then unfortunately you are guilty of committing the sin of covetousness. Do you remember what Luke 12 verse 15 says? Christ, he states to his followers, beware of covetousness. And the word in the original text, covetousness, it could be read or understood as a thirsting for more. A thirsting for more. How pictorial is that? You hunger and you thirst after more. Oh, you have, but you're hungering after more. And when you're hungry or thirsty, you're not satisfied. And so you'll not stop until you have more. You see, whilst Donald Trump says you cannot be too greedy, Scripture clearly states you most certainly can be too greedy. You need to beware of the sin of covetousness. It is a sin. And this world, it is marked by sin. And we as individuals, and you personally, you are a sinner. So if your heart is, as the heart of every man in this world, then the chances are that at one stage in your life or other, you will have been guilty of committing this crime against God. I would dare to venture to say that everybody, every person in this congregation has in some way sat in the chair with Gehazi. You have been guilty of this sin. It could be something small. Maybe even as a child, and you see something that your friend has, even in school. Or even in your latter days, it doesn't really matter. You could take any form of example, but the point is this, is that we're all guilty of this in some way, shape, or fashion. So we need, like Jesus Christ says, to beware of covetousness and to reach out afresh, and we need to lay hold upon the power that is available to overcome by the blood of the Lamb and by the Spirit of Jesus Christ. That is how you overcome. You look to the victory of the One who in no way was guilty of any form of sin. Who in no way, there was no guile found in the mouth of Christ. Who was completely innocent. Who was inwardly completely perfect. And nonetheless, the One who shed His blood for you and for me. That is how you overcome. You overcome, as Revelation 12 tells us, they overcame him, that Satan, by the blood of the Lamb. And you overcome the temptation of Satan without, and the temptation of your own heart within by the blood of the Lamb and by the power of the Spirit of Jesus Christ. An unusual advert appeared in England in 1836, and it offered a prize of 100 guineas to the author of the best essay on the sin of covetousness. The advert began this way: "Many of the wisest and best men are of the opinion that there is no sin so prevalent amongst Christians today as the love of money. And yet there is no subject on which so little has been written or said." The winning essay was entitled this, "Covetousness, the Sin of the Christian Church." And yes, whilst we see it outside the professing church of Jesus Christ, and yes, whilst we are saved sinners, we must always remember that we still are sinners. Paul said, "I am what I am, but for the grace of God." And it's only the transforming grace of God that has made you to differ. That's what Paul said. Who maketh thee to differ? It's Christ that makes anybody here to differ, but whether they're saved or unsaved. It's Christ that makes the difference. And so this morning, we need to guard our own hearts. Proverbs 4 tells us, out of the heart are the issues of life, flow the issues of life. So we need to guard the heart. We need to beware that we fall into the trap and the snare that sadly Gehazi fell into. To fall into the desire that running after riches. So there was an aspiration that dominated him. I want you to see secondly here, there then was an acquisition that degraded him. An acquisition that degraded him. Verses 22 and 23, he comes to Naaman, and we read, he said, "All is well. My master has sent me, saying, Behold, even now there be come to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garments." Naaman said, "Be content. Take 2 talents. And he urged him, bound 2 talents of silver in 2 bags with 2 changes of garments, and laid them upon his 2 servants, and they bare him before him." Whenever Gehazi eventually caught up with Naaman, he then is presented with this nice story. It's a nice sounding story. It's a religious story. And he's presented with this story. The story simply is this. Gehazi comes to Naaman, and he said, there were 2 young sons of the prophets, 2 young prophets in training. And it seems they didn't have very much. So what did they do? Well, they asked me for some money. And then I relayed to them that, Naaman, you had just offered silver and gifts to Elisha, but he didn't take them. So I'm just here now, and I am just asking you for a talent of silver and two changes of garments, and then I'll take them back to the two sons of prophets. Now that sounds charitable. Here were two men who were in need. It seems they were in training for full-time service. And here's Naaman, and he's a rich man. Remember, he's second in command in Syria. He's second only to Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria. He's obviously a man of substance, a man of wealth. And so Gehazi thinks to himself, if I just concoct this religious-sounding lie, then I'll keep it for myself. And so he tells them, there were two young men, and they were in need. And so you've offered your gift to individuals who have helped you. Why not just give it to me? And I'll be sure that these two young men, that they get all that you have given me. Sounds good, doesn't it? It was a complete lie. A complete lie. Two young men, you do not read of them in this portion that we have read today. It was a complete and utter lie. Gehazi, he wanted this silver for himself. And the amazing thing is this, is that whenever Gehazi comes to Naaman and they first meet, Naaman asks Gehazi the question, is all well? And Gehazi responds, all is well. And yet all the while he was concocting this lie in his own mind. So whilst outwardly he feels that all is well, inwardly, it most definitely is not. Inwardly, he has concocted this lie in his own mind. He has a heart that is set on riches. He was deluded. Money has become his God. And so he then presents this lie to a new convert, to a new believer in Jehovah. Why? Simply to take his silver for himself. And when covetousness sets in, then false witness usually follows. You see, covetousness is the mother sin of all others. You go run your eye down through the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, the moral law. Do you know what you'll find? You'll find this, that the breaking of all of those commandments, it starts with the last one, the sin of covetousness. When you want something, then the natural man says, well, I'm going to get it. That's why it ends up, you, for example, individuals break the ninth commandment, sin of adultery, because they want something that doesn't belong to them. They're coveting after that person or that, whatever it might be. And so then, one sin, it then leads to another. And that's what covetousness does. It leads to adultery, leads to false witness. How often, whenever you set your heart on something, then you'll lie. You will lie until you get it. That something can even perhaps be legitimate, but at the same time it consumes you, and then you feel that you must tell one lie, and then the next lie, and to do anything to get it, you will lie and you will concoct stories. Oh, I trust that you're beginning to see your own heart here. Your own heart. We all have a heart like this. We all have that heart that is sinful. That is, as Jeremiah tells us, deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And who can know it? Who can know it? What a question there. Who can know it? Oh, I trust that you're seeing your own heart this morning. Luke 16:13 says that no man can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Christ, he states that whenever you set your heart to serve Christ and serve God, you become his servant, you become his slave, you become completely sold out to him. However, whenever you serve mammon, which simply means money, then you then become a servant of money. You then set yourself to essentially become a slave to it and do anything in order to attain it. However, Proverbs 16 verse 8 tells us, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. Let me repeat that for you. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. It's better to have a little and to have righteousness. And it's speaking there about personal righteousness. Not the righteousness that comes at salvation. Personal holiness. Personal righteousness. It's better to have a little. Better to have a little. But be walking with God and guarding your own heart. Better to have a little than great revenues. But not have it in a right, attaining it in a right manner. Proverbs 28 verse 6 states, better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he be rich. Whilst possessing riches is not a sin, riches possessing you is a sin. And moreover, it usually leads to other sins as well. How often have you come across this, maybe with other people, or maybe in your own heart? You want something. It's legitimate. And you maybe have to concoct a story to get it. And to tell a lie, maybe, or bear false witness in order just to get that one thing. Oh, covetousness, why do we need to beware of it? We need to beware of it because there's no telling the depths that we will fall to whenever it takes over our lives. Oh, here was an aspiration that dominated him, and there was an acquisition that degraded him. I want you to see lastly then, speaking of Gehazi, greedy Gehazi, think with me about an arrest that detained him. An arrest that detained him. Verses 24 and 25 we read, when he came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house. And he let the men go and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said unto him, whence comest thou, Gehazi? And he said, thy servant went no whither. The story continues. Gehazi was there. There were two other servants with him. And so what does he do? Well, he lays down the silver and the two changes of raiment upon these two servants. We then read that they go to a tower. Tower, of course, in scripture, you read of towers often being used. They were an edifice. They were high. They were concealed. It was somewhere where a person could look out for the enemy that was encroaching. And so Gehazi and these two servants, well, they head up to a tower. They want to be hidden, you see. And Gehazi, he then, it states here that when they came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house. In other words, he gave something. He gave them something for their help. And then he comes to Elisha. And Elisha asks the question, where have you been, Gehazi? You've been away for quite a while. Where have you been? And again, here's Gehazi, and he's lying again. Verse 25, thy servant went nowhither. Thy servant went nowhere. Do you see it? You see him standing there, and he just looks so innocent. Oh, thy servant, I'm your servant. I haven't been anywhere. I've just been here, just been there. But no, I haven't been anywhere. But Elisha here shows again that he is the man of many miracles. And he actually performs, I believe, a miracle here. And he prefigures Jesus Christ here in his omniscience. Because Elisha, he knows exactly where Gehazi has been. And he also even knows what Gehazi plans to do with this money. He then states there in verse 26, he said unto him, went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from this chariot to meet thee? He's saying, went my heart not with you? My heart was with you, Gehazi, whenever Naaman turned again to meet you. And then he states this, verse 26, is it a time to receive money and receive garments and olive yards, vineyards, sheep and oxen and manservants and maidservants? He essentially says this, Gehazi, I know exactly what you did. You went out to meet Naaman. And you went. And you asked him for one talent of silver and two changes of clothing. And actually the thing that really struck me in all of this was this. That Naaman gives them two talents of silver. Gehazi only asks for one, but Naaman gives him two. That's a small detail. But that actually shows the genuineness of Naaman's conversion. He gives them more than they ask for. And yet anyway, here's Elisha, and he says his heart went with Gehazi the whole way. Oh, Gehazi, you thought you were on your own. You thought I knew nothing about it. You thought you would get away with this. But Gehazi, my heart was with you all the way. And more than that, Gehazi, is it a time to get to your self-possessions? Gehazi, is it a time really to start your own business? That's what he's saying. To receive money and garments and olive yards, vineyards, sheep and oxen, manservants and maidservants. It's not the right time for this. You're still my servant and I haven't released you of your duties yet. Gehazi, now is not the time to be getting ground for yourself and to be getting servants for yourself and sheep and oxen and all the rest of it. And so what does he do? Well, Elisha, he shows Gehazi that he knew not only what he did, but he even knew what he had planned to do with that money. Oh, here then is Gehazi, and he feels that as if he's getting away with it. And yet all the while, Elisha, although he wasn't there physically, yet he was there miraculously, because he saw exactly what he did, and he even knew what he planned to do with the money. You see, the covetous and crooked man will eventually be a caught out man. His ways will be discovered. What is Elisha showing us today? Who is he prefiguring? He's prefiguring Jesus Christ. But he's showing you this, that Christ knows your heart. Christ knows your heart. If Elisha here, a mere man set apart by God, was miraculously able to see exactly what Gehazi did and even know what he planned to do as well. How frightening is that? Should that not stir you to pursue after not riches but the riches of Christ in redemption? Should that not motivate you and stimulate you that Christ knows everything? That he, yes, knows your failures and your falterings, but he even knows at times what you plan to do and your schemes, even if you haven't done them yet. Oh, the Lord, he knows your heart. He knows exactly not only what you've done, but also even what you plan to do. He knows the crookedness within. And he also has provided an answer for it by observing him in his humility, and observing him in his perfection, observing him in his ways. When he was tempted by the devil, what was his response? It is written. It is written. He turned each time to Scripture. And it wasn't a well-known verse of Scripture. Each time he turned to the Pentateuch, to portions of Leviticus, and so on. Oh, the Lord, he knew his Bible. As a man, yes. Oh, yes, he was God and he was the eternal Word. But Christ, he knew his Bible and he was able to quote it back to Satan. And whenever temptation comes your way, child of God, you give Satan the answer of Scripture. You rebuff his attacks with Scripture. The Lord knows the heart. John 2, at the beginning of his ministry, he was performing miracles. And in verse 24, we read that Jesus did not commit himself to them because he knew all men and needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. Here were individuals. Christ had just begun his ministry, performing miracles, and there were some and they were interested from afar in him. But we read the Lord didn't commit himself to these men. Why? Because he knew what was in them. He knew what was in man. What a frightening statement about Christ. He knew what was in man. He knew their thoughts. He knew their motives for following after him. Paul again, reminding young Timothy that every man has a covetous heart. He said in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10, the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And that phrase, pierced through, it refers to an animal on a spit. You know an animal on a spit? You see them sometimes in third world countries. And the spit, it's right through the animal. That's the thought here in pierced through. He's saying when you covet after riches, it pierces through you. It's so painful. It brings such pain. Oh, when riches possess you, they then pierce through you. They cause great pain. Oh, here was Gehazi. And it had ramifications not only in his life, because the leprosy that Naaman was cleansed of was then miraculously bestowed upon Gehazi. He was smitten with leprosy. But also his family were as well. His seed after him, his children. His family suffered because of his covetous heart. And he was arrested. arrested spiritually speaking. Oh, today the Lord's teaching you this, that if you continue on in your covetous ways, that there'll be ramifications not only in your life, but even perhaps in your family. Your family, they're watching on. And there is this disease, and they see it in you, and it'll spread to them. Today, your family's righteousness depends on your own personal holiness. They're watching on. I finish with this. Some years ago, a journalist visited the home of the great boxing champion, Muhammad Ali. Whenever he first retired, he was on all sorts of sports shows, talk shows and that. He was talking about his great accomplishments and so on. However, he then just disappeared off the scene all of a sudden. Nobody heard of him. Nobody saw him. And so there was this journalist, and he decided, well, I'm going to try and track him down and find out just what went wrong. His name was Gary Smith. So eventually he went to his private home, Muhammad Ali, and he asked him about things, and they began to talk. Muhammad Ali then told this reporter to come to the barn that was next to his house. And there in that barn, there it was an old, rough barn, hadn't been touched in quite a while. And there in the corner of that barn were all of his pictures and all of his belts. However, they were in a terrible, terrible state. And Ali walked over to these pictures and his old belts and so on, replicas of his old belts, rather. And he began to mumble. And Smith couldn't hear him. He said, I didn't hear what you said, Muhammad. And so he said this, I had the world, and it was all nothing. Look at it now. Look at it now. And here's greedy Gehazi. He has more than enough to get by, but he's running after riches. And it ends up having terrible ramifications, not only upon him, but upon his family as well. Let's learn the lesson this morning of greedy Gehazi and his God of gold. May the Lord bless his word to your lives and hearts today.